Okay. Let's review and approve the this month's November's agenda. Would anyone like to make any amends or changes to the agenda? Seeing none, that's approved. Let's review and approve last month's draft minutes. We have those up. Does anyone want to make any changes or amendments to that? Last month's draft minutes? Okay, looks cool. So we can, that's approved, last month's minutes. So let's go to announcements. Are there any announcements? Anyone have any announcements? Okay, is there any public comment? No. Okay, so with that, I guess we'll move right to Stephen Spanos and the HCAP report. Stephen?
Hey, thank you all. So first, I apologize for the delay on getting this out to you all today because our power was actually out yesterday. And so I wasn't able to even work on it. I guess in the interest of time, as I kind of always do, I'll highlight a couple of issues. First, I have had a significant increase in dental service issues. Some of them are quality control issues. Some of them are suspension. I've had various levels of success in negotiating or mediating those disputes. Some of them are still working, so I'm not quite ready to talk about it, but I did want to talk about the increase in those issues because it continues to be a high level of need for the clients. And I'll point to one issue specifically on page 10, which is 2021-63 is the HCAP number. I highlight this, as I try to highlight the ones that I think are particularly, at least in this meeting, particularly interesting to the community and this committee. This is something that I see a high level of need for, but that I rarely have an opportunity to advocate for because there's just simply not a lot of, there's not a lot of services available. But in this instance, a client was receiving services for support of their service animal through a psychosocial support agency. The service provider does everything that they can, in my experience, to support clients, doing this. But it was kind of an unfortunate situation. The client's animal died, and I wasn't so verbose about it, and which is why I'm elaborating on it. But the client's support animal died several years ago, and then COVID hit, and they weren't, that became a really hard time to get an animal. There was this grieving period where the client wasn't really ready to really did need the support of a support animal, but wasn't really ready to jump on board with taking care of a new animal just yet. And then by that time, the kind of time had elapsed. The client did request an extension, and that extension was granted. The first extension was granted, and then, the animal that he found at that time did not really work out. And by then, it was the extension had expired. So I did go back to the service provider and request an extension. That extension was denied. Which is just unfortunate, but the basis for it is an understandable which is that there's a wait list of, in the triple digits and not in the low triple digits of people who need this level of support and could use support from psychosocial support services, service providers to help them in this. And I can speak to the fact that, at least from legal services, angle, dealing with support animals winds up being a significant amount of time for us. It's not the most pressing issue, but it affects housing, it affects people's health, it affects access barrier. It's an access barrier for a lot of people, for not only for their housing, but where they're going to receive care. So it is an issue that I told the client, my kind of last ditch effort for advocacy for the client is to come to this committee to kind of talk with them and make you all aware that, at least from my standpoint and in my office, there is a high level of need for this. And if there's a way to find funding within the HIV health services that hasn't already been allocated for that, it is certainly something that I'm going to support in advocacy efforts. I do think it's an important, it serves an important need. I think a lot of people get a lot of benefit from their support animals. People living with HIV have, you know, traditionally, you know, relied on, you know, their animals for that. And as the population ages and, you know, and as isolation continues, I think support animals will, you know, the need for support animals will only increase. So I told the client that I would specifically advocate on his behalf in this meeting, and I've done that now. So with that, I'll open it up for questions to see if there's anything else on the report that I can talk to. I will follow up real quick on, not that there has been any questions, but I will follow up on a question that Richard asked last week, which is, you know, have the housing, the RCFCI questions, have those been resolved at this point? I think I have officially closed my last case with regard to those today. I closed it not because there was any satisfying resolution, but because I have not been able to reach the client for several months now. I am informed that the client has been rehoused, but I was not a process of that resolution, unfortunately. And so, I haven't been able to confirm with the client that okay, but typically that means that the client is supported, and I know that they are connected to housing. So there might be one lingering issue that I know the client is supported on that I just haven't been able to close out yet. In fact, now that I'm thinking about it, I think that there is only one more, but I wanted to report back to Richard based on his question last month.
Well, Stephen, if I could, several months ago, this was a big issue for a couple of meetings. And so what's the overall summary of, you know, everyone got housed, the turnover, what was the summation? If there is such a, you say you closed out.
Well, so yeah, I mean, in my office, it's, you know, I only deal with individual cases. This was an issue where, you know, one of the buildings was kind of, you know, highly affected because they had a lot of transition. The reasons for that are kind of unclear, but I do know that the Mayor's Office of Housing was very heavily involved. My advocacy, to this committee, as well as, you know, AORP's advocacy with our government partners at the mayor's office and trying to be present in the community and showing up to all the housing meetings and all of the work groups that were issued. You know, our government partners have been incredibly supportive through the process. And I think that together we were able to get a really strong result. To sum up, you know, it is kind of difficult to give you a summary answer. You know, some of the clients were rehoused in, you know, facilities that have been de-licensed. Some of the clients were the recipients of a housing voucher that was able to be used within a period of time, but that would then be, you know, provided, you know, basically, you know, a rent subsidy, an ongoing rent subsidy, you know, with no end date. You know, the instances, you know, my summary is that I think it is very fortunate we do not go through transitions of this magnitude very regularly. I think it could have been done much more delicately and with a little bit more forethought and with a little bit more You know, a lot of the questions that we wound up having to get answered in the heat of the moment, had they been answered beforehand, could have avoided a lot of transfer trauma. And I wish that that were the case. I'm glad that we picked up the ball and that we were able to kind of rein it in a little bit. But, you know, things like that don't instill, you know, issues like the ones that I were experiencing and you know, don't instill faith in the, you know, in the hearts of those affected people that they're being well cared for by their community. And, you know, that continues to unfortunately be the case, despite, you know, what I would call really great successes for them, in that most of the clients at this point are stably housed with permanent housing. Well, a small portion of them are stably housed with permanent housing. All of them are supported to some extent with some supportive services. And, you know, the others are in kind of a transitional place because the mayor's office has basically, what has happened is this de-licensing has resulted in having several facilities out here that people have traditionally been able to rely on for, you know, well, not traditionally, but traditionally it was supposed to be short-term housing. It wound up becoming longer-term housing because we did not have other resources to move people into. Then we have just started calling them transitional, you know, facilities. And so the people that are living there still are unclear, but at least they have some breathing room to figure it out. And they are presumably supported by the services staff that is on site to help them move towards that next step. And so that's kind of the next, I think, although we are kind of wrapped in the kind of heat of the moment, I think we are moving toward, you know, I think we're going to have to readdress this in short order, because my understanding is that a lot of the folks that were moved to transitional care facilities that will only be there for a period of 1 to 2 years. And to my knowledge, we have not secured long-term deep subsidies for those people to move out into independent living. The conversations that I've had kind of lead to, oh, well, you know, we hope for those people to get, you know, to get it, to go back to work. And there are programs to help them go back to work. There's a lot of the clients that have been told that or kind of, you know, encouraged toward that. You know, they're older, and it's not likely that they will actually be able to do that. So I think we're going to have to like have some conversation about the reality of that situation. And that will probably be the 2022 issue, at least from my desk. But as of right now, kind of the acute issue where we thought people were going to really not have any support back in July, we've mostly resolved that.
Does anyone have anything for Stephen?
I would encourage folks from the community to show up to the Mayor's Office of Housing work groups and all of the things that are available. You know, any support from the community, I think, would go a long way. And my understanding is that, you know, there are some folks in the Mayor's Office that want to hear from the community, and, you know, the people who show up, like, you know, tend to make a difference. So, you know, that's always something I'll advocate for.
Right. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you all.
So we can move over to the needs assessment updates and COLA targets. David or Melina?
Um, I can go first. I don't have a lot to update on from our last meeting around the COLA. JP and his colleague Chris have both been helpful, and our most recent strategy is I sent Chris like a paper version of the survey. He had suggested case managers printing out the survey to give to clients to fill out while they're in their office. But it sounds like nothing has really materialized yet. So I'm just continuing to follow up and hoping that something comes of it. But I think it's kind of the same situation that we talked about last month.
Yeah, kind of the same. I think that, you know, I'm similar to Melina. We are, you know, there's some discussion or some working with service providers to try and come up with some strategies to work around some of these things. I am ideally getting my booster shot in the next week or so. And my wife just got hers, and the kid, I may also get hers early because of the thing with the CDC yesterday. It might be that I might just try and like quickly throw together like a couple like in-person focus groups sometime within the next like 6 weeks, just to get some numbers. That's my sort of plan as of right now. But that is, again, contingent upon the sort of health system getting everyone their shots and everyone feeling comfortable. It's sort of kind of feeling like the only way anything is going to happen, because literally nobody is interested in doing a sort of remote survey action. Richard, I also need to follow up with you around what we had discussed last time. I think that that also has some promise. So that's sort of where I am. I don't really have anything else to add.
All right. David, also, if I may, I had a conversation with Talia Roven from Shanti, and I mentioned the COLA and needs assessment situation. And she said she actually had a lot of clients that might be interested in that, and that she would reach out to you if that helps at all.
Okay, I talked to Talia like a few months ago, and she did send me a couple people then, but I haven't heard from her since. So I will just follow up with her.
Yeah, this was a week ago we met and spoke, and I mentioned that, and she said she was going to get to you, but that's just a thought.
Yeah, no, people have a lot going on, but I know Talia, like, you know, Talia is a friend. I will follow up with her, and we'll make something happen around that. So thank you for mentioning that.
Okay. So next on the agenda is the aging and HIV. So it says the committee will discuss this topic further to implement necessary steps. I think last month it was kind of, you know, Dean and some other folks were talking about maybe getting back to us and seeing what's going on, or, you know, we were just going to bounce it around a little more. So anyone would like to chime in on this about where we're going with this or where it stands, possibly Dean?
I will say we do have something from HIV Health Services that John prepared. He couldn't be here today, so I'll present and Dean will jump in at all points. But do you guys want to talk about the broad stuff first, or see what we have first and then broaden the discussion? Okay, all right, let me get my screen sharing together. I don't use Zoom Flat. One moment. Can you guys see, does this to you look like a good PowerPoint presentation in a way you can see? Oh, and I can't see your nods if I do it that way. So I'll just have you guys cover this. Okay, perfect. So essentially we weren't 100% sure exactly where to go with this. So feel free to give us feedback. And what we've done here is pick four of the main service categories: medical case management, outpatient ambulatory care, psychosocial support, and one more that is skipping my mind at this moment, but we'll go through all the slides. And there's there's a few different places in Aries. I mean, I remember we communicated that one of the limitations is what we can pull in Aries from the different reporting. So each of those service categories, we have a different view from a different report, what we are able to do around ages. So this first one is medical case management, and it's a 4-year view from 2018 to 2021. And I'll say what one particular percentage, the age breakouts, first of all, are about a decade between 20 and 89. And so this first one where it says 68.1% of people aged 20 to 29 receive medical case management, which is represented right here. So of fairly young people in their 20s, quite a few people, more than 2/3, are receiving case management as of 2018. And that has been fairly consistent. The lines are all fairly level. So that has been consistent over the 4 years. Whereas taken to the other extreme in last year for people between ages 80 to 89, only a little bit over a quarter, 25.7% received medical case management. Some of these numbers may be lower in the most recent time period because of COVID, especially as you get to the older ages. So both medical case management and primary care seem to be a little older in the people over age 80. And we think that's why. I should also mention these years aren't calendar years, they're Ryan White years ending then. So this 2021 data wouldn't be complete if it were calendar year through December 31st, but this is actually through the end of the Ryan White year on February 28th. So it's actually March 2020 through February 28th, 2021. And essentially what this shows is that younger people are accessing more medical case management than older people. And the trends are fairly stable over time with some declines amongst the older two decades of population in the last period, especially. Any questions about how, and this particular data comes from the STAR report in Aries, and it's one where you can specify the age ranges a little more clearly. It's just that each one of these has to be pulled independently, each of these cells. It doesn't come out of Aries looking like this. Questions about what a data point means? Is that clear? This one? Okay.
Yeah, it's clear.
Okay, awesome. Thanks, Lee. Then this next one is just looking at a different cut point of 65, and that's largely selected because of Medicare eligibility age. So the blue line is people under age 65, and the orange line is people age 65 and above. And so younger people under 65 are more likely to access case management than older people above 65. That might be because they already have their Medicare together and all sorts of reasons. So this is a little simpler of a table. And for each of the slides, for the other service categories, we have these same two slides. And the percentages represent the same thing, that 59.7% of people under 65 receive medical case management in 2018. Then we have outpatient ambulatory healthcare. And again, the lines are fairly steady with all age groups and the largest decline in the oldest age group in the 2021 year, and that was amidst COVID. So we think that's just a temporary dip. And these people may have received labs and just not come in for primary care visits, which is what outpatient ambulatory care includes in person for the most part. Phone visits would count as well if recorded as such in Aries. And essentially, there is also quite a bit of spread from the youngest to the oldest decade. So the 20 to 29-year-olds, about 75.4% received outpatient ambulatory care. And certainly before the COVID time in 2018, about 40% of people ages 80 to 89 received primary care in our system. One thing I should say, and this is one reason we all have a little bit, a few reservations about interpretability of this data, is that the baseline here of the number of people in each of these decades are among not everybody in San Francisco who's diagnosed with HIV, but among everybody who's HIV positive and receives services in our HIV Health Services network that's reported in Aries. So somebody who exclusively went to Kaiser and never went to Project Open Hand or any of the other, you know, places in our system wouldn't necessarily be part of this data. So this is only for the people served by the contract that are under Ryan White and the general fund that also expands the HIV Health Services budget. So does that make sense? So if somebody is going to one or more Ryan White funded service, then they're in this pool. Okay, I'll keep going through them, but does anybody have a question yet?
Just a question. Do we know the number of people the total number of people, then you can figure out who's accessed services and who hasn't, like a percentage?
Yes, we, Dean and I were talking about having the N added later because the 80 to 89 is actually also a very small number of people. So overall, in any given year, it's about 6,000 and 6,500 clients across all age groups in each year. But within it, but that's across our network. Outpatient ambulatory care, I want to say is closer to 3,000 or 4,000 are getting that. So in some of the service categories like psychosocial support, it's not going to be as many people. So I guess we could very roughly extrapolate that about 50% of about 6,500 people are getting outpatient ambulatory care. So most likely each of these years represents about 3,500 people. And yeah. I think it's probably similar. It looks like about half are getting medical case management. So that number would be the same. And let's get a smaller one, psychosocial support. It looks like more like 15% of that same 6,500 people. So that would be quite a bit smaller.
Yeah, I think it's an important reminder that you're going to have to keep hammering home to people like this isn't everybody who's HIV positive. Just these are the people right. that are accessing services at one point or another. So kind of understanding what that percentage is helpful.
Okay. So yeah, we would need to put an introductory slide if this were going to be a presentation to the council saying something along those lines and also add at least a bottom line end for each year.
Yeah, I agree. I would love that.
Okay, great. And I think I didn't do this over and under 65 for outpatient care yet. Sorry if I already did it, but this one's important because of Medicare. The difference is even greater that the people under 65 are 65% receiving outpatient ambulatory care in our system, and only about 40-45% of people over 65 are still receiving outpatient ambulatory care in our system. And psychosocial support, this one shows sort of the reverse, where the older people are the most likely, maybe the people over age 80 are the most likely to be in psychosocial support group. And the youngest people, the lighter blue, 20 to 29 are, it looks like the least likely across, like only, you know, about 2-3% are people in the 20s, and people in the 80s represent closer to 15-20%. And again, they all do dip a bit, and maybe even more so in this year because groups in person is not a, we were just talking about that. It's not the thing to do this year. So some of that can be done remotely, but less of that is being done overall. And then we've got, oh, please, go ahead.
Sorry. Also, just one thing to point out as a challenge with this particular service modality in ARES is that several of these are groups. And it's not capturing everybody that received a group service. The way the construct of ARES is that one, when you enter a client, you have to enter a unit of service. And so like if you had 50 clients in one support group, the usual practice is that they pick one client randomly, and 50 is a high number, say 10. There are 10 clients in a psychosocial support group that were at one meeting. What is usually put in ARES is one client is selected and that UOS is entered into that one client and the others are not. We might get a more accurate number from an invoice, but as far as ARES data, it's not capturing the full extent of everyone participating in a group psychosocial support, just to clarify that a bit. Sorry to interrupt, Beth.
No, that's a good point. That might be a reason I didn't realize for why these numbers are lower.
Yeah. And I wish we could fix that, but it's the construct of how ARES is set up. One unit equals one client, or one client equals one unit.
Yeah, and it's just that clarification, which I think is important, especially for council members to remember this, you know, as we move forward, this is what it captures and this is what it doesn't capture, right? So we always are aware of that.
Yep. Good point. Sorry, Beth.
Oh, no, that was good clarification. And then we have the under 65, over 65 version of that, which has the same picture, just a little more broadly grouped. That people over 65 are more likely, quite a, like three times or more likely to be in the psychosocial group or psychosocial support program. And then food, home delivered meals is the fourth category we chose as an example. And the Navy is, again, the people in their 80s, And that looks to be near the top, but actually pretty much anybody 40 and above seems to be pretty tightly grouped around 30%. And the people in their 20s and 30s are somewhere below 5% to up to about 13%, it looks like, but substantially less likely to be accessing food services. And the broader cut of the 65, here we have 30% of people over 65 accessing food services and almost 20% of under 65. And so again, this one that is the broader set, this is from the Tableau, which is more similar to what Johnny Inslee uses in the service summary sheets where we have that pie chart. And the more data is available from the STAR report, but it has to just be pulled, you know, in a little more granular fashion. So please let us know if this is along the right line and what tweaks you would make in addition to the framing things Lee's pointed out about the N and the, you know, generally what the data does and doesn't represent and limitations of how it's entered in areas for the second social.
No, I think it's awesome. I find it intriguingly interesting, especially since you're including years like before the pandemic and during the pandemic, because it's kind of interesting to see if the pandemic affected these populations, right?
That's true. I was a little surprised by the people who are in their 80s, the lessened the ambulatory care earlier today when I first reviewed these. And I pretty quickly realized, oh, that was what was going on. So I don't think we have been able to look at that very much. So you're right, this is a good starting point to look at that as well.
You know, and as we saw in the service summary sheet data, I was actually surprised that the utilization was higher in most categories than what I was expecting it to be after COVID. I mean, it was down a bit, but it wasn't down as low as it may have been. I think all of our providers did a really good job of sustaining service. What we saw was that the number of the clients, the UDC goals were higher than the UOS goals. So clients may have been coming in less frequently, but they were still coming in during the COVID period. From the data, I mean, it's extracting it from the data.
Yeah, no, I think it's entirely fascinating, and it'd be interesting to show this to the full council. Because I think your observation is really interesting because, like you said, it could have been just the opposite, but people were still coming in even though the pandemic was going on. And where it's interesting is the services that didn't, where there weren't as many, especially in the age categories, where people weren't accessing services for one reason or another. I'm loving it. Thank you.
And do let us know also what you think next step, and you don't have to decide today, of course, but whether this is something that should go to community affairs as a presentation, or if, you know, as a, you know, a preview of presentation, or if more discussion about how to refine this should happen next. And whether or not we pick the right four categories to represent, you know, those sorts of questions as well.
I'm in favor of moving it forward with the, you know, the kind of the minor changes that I mentioned before, especially capturing the population in terms of, you know, who's not included, and especially with the social psychosocial support, what those numbers actually mean in terms of not capturing everybody.
I was curious how we're gonna proceed and carry this category forward in our community engagement meetings going forward. Okay, so we've done this today. How do we bring aging and HIV to this meeting going forward? What are our plans? Does that make sense? I remember Dave Jordan saying about like, what's the end result? What are we looking to do?
We're probably going to need a little more guidance on this from Dave, you know, from administrative staff about what we do next.
And is it time for members of the public to speak yet? Just a question about order of operations. Because I think Stephen has a possible comment I saw in the chat or question. And I also often don't know when I can, when it's my turn. So I understand the question very well.
As far as from your process question, for these committee things, we generally don't stand on too much ceremony, and you guys can just jump in. In most respects, you are an equal. You just don't get the vote.
Well, I appreciate it. I found this data interesting. I was like equally unsure about how this data was going to be used, but seeing the data actually provides me, a little bit more food for thought, because one of the most interesting things for me, and this is something that Richard and I can talk about, is, the amount of case management support that people in their 20s are receiving compared to those people in their later years. And I could see, there's one thing I can see very clearly from my desk, and also that from talking with other service providers at the level that I speak with them, they are two very different goals when you're talking about case management with those two groups of people. And in the same way that I would think, primary care has a different goal and a very different need. Somebody who's in their 60s or 70s may really just be looking for somebody to do things for them that they cannot do. Whereas somebody who's in their 20s or 30s may just need some support in being shown how to do it themselves. You're talking about people in their transitional age youth in their 20s, they may not have guide, you may be talking about somebody who, the comparison is somebody who's in a wheelchair that needs, intensive case management support for going to every appointment, compared to somebody who needs somebody who needs to be shown how to fill out their paperwork for their thing. And I don't know that we actually have a breakdown for that, but it might help service providers be more exacting in how they're actually providing services. And especially in the case management realm, it seems to me that has always been kind of an amorphous thing. We have terms like case management, medical case management, non-medical case management, intensive case management, and they tend to all kind of get looped together in when we're looking at data. But I think it is an important question to hash out, because we can be more efficient with service provision if we know what we're trying to accomplish for each individual age group. And we've done that in other realms, like when we're trying to talk, when we create COAs or COEs, we divide up because we know there's a different need that we're trying to achieve. And I was impressed to see this data, because I think that is helpful for that purpose. I think that might be one next question that this group could probably organize around.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen. One thing that just occurred to me in looking at this data the second or third time is maybe what might be helpful in those age ranges, and I don't know if we can do this, Beth, you may better know, if there's a way that we could get an average by age decade range of service categories that each person were accessing, right? Because we have 20 some different service categories. And I would guess that at the younger end, there are very few, as Stephen was describing, because of their different needs that change as they age. And it could also be an artifact of, we have a couple very specific youth-related programs that provide services. And one of the largest pieces of that is medical case management, ambulatory outpatient health services. So they're definitely entering, if they're in that program, they're getting that service. But I think what we are probably also seeing is that there are people that may have some kind of private insurance where they're not coming in for medical case management or primary care, but they're accessing for food or dental or legal or other things that aren't covered that they need. You know what I mean? Like there's a constellation of need and services and eligibility that is impacting this too. It's not just in a vacuum of you can pick whatever you want and everything's in front of you all at once. You know what I mean? There's a lot to interpret and extrapolate from this.
So just again, I'm kind of a slow learner. What would we like to, what would be the theme of the next meeting under HIV and aging? What is anyone going to bring anything, or what do you think it would, that direction would be? Not just show up and bat it around, right? Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was what we asked last month, was what,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
was,
yeah.
What was the genesis? What was the goal? What, to give us an idea what we should try to grab and pull together. Cause we had a request to kind of look for some of the state and bring it back, but we're a little unclear on what you all would like as a next step as well.
Yeah. So Richard, I mean, I think it's, in order to answer that question, you should think about sort of, what your responsibilities are as a council, what your sort of mandated powers are, and what things you have purview over. And those two things are essentially funding and best practices. So is there a way to apply the information gained today to either examining best practices or funding recommendations? And a third option is sometimes, you know, you can just sort of shout into the ether and just put out some sort of, like, you know, statement of intent or statement of whatever. That is a thing that the council does, a sort of a proclamation. But it feels as though, I mean, I'm also a little hazy on, I think that we've learned things. I'm not sure where we come down on sort of recommendations, though, and those recommendations generally sort of center around, you know, a funding recommendation.
I have one more thought to maybe add. My interpretation of the likely place origin of this question is anticipating future trends. Like, I felt like people wanted to understand as the aging population happens, how that relates to service categories. So partly just demystifying like this, but also then, you know, just understanding what might be coming down the horizon. And I don't think that's something we in HIV Health Services would necessarily do an extrapolation of, but that's just one thing that seemed like it underlay the question.
The other thing that sort of is an aspect of this is a lot of the informational resources that you guys access as council members aren't necessarily directly actionable. They're often just there to inform your decision-making process as you move forward. This is a little bit of a weird time because generally any informational resources you're getting throughout the year, whether they're from Stephen, from me, from any service providers or other members of the government, generally are there to inform your decision-making process around the summit. And sometimes, and you know, like from my perspective, when I'm doing the needs assessment stuff, I generally come with a, you know, my recommendations, my data generally comes with a group of recommendations. And that's sort of been those are my marching orders, is to provide that as part of it. Sometimes it's not so clear cut. You can just take this information and digest it, internalize it, and apply it to future decision making if it does not seem like there's a clear cut action connected to it. I'm just trying to lay out your options here so that you don't feel like you're, I feel like that's my job in sort of guiding the process here.
If I could, there's more learned people here than me on these committees, but like kind of in line with what David just said, I see these numbers and I can use this as a foundation going forward in my thought processes. And these services are basically, they're covered in other categories. And if these things come up again, I can lean on what we've discussed for my decision-making. Other than that, at least for myself, I don't know what more the community engagement meeting can do with an aging and HIV segment. So it might not be necessary on the agenda anymore, or is that the wrong thing to say?
I also feel like Derek had a lot of questions and a lot of like opinion as well about the topic. So it's unfortunate he's not here today as well.
And also from the full council, from the service summary sheet presentation, Ken Pierce had some questions, and he was really hoping that we would be able to extrapolate the 60 to 65 age range, which is just really not doable. Practically, we have to do it, you know, contract by contract, and then merge that by funding source and extrapolate it as part of a larger, broader picture. And it's not something that lends itself to data sharing very easily. What that data that John pulled together, I asked him how long that took, and that represents about 10 hours of work, which we're happy to do. And what he tried to do by capturing that over 4 years was to see if there's a trend, if there's like an increase or a jump at the end or something. And other than the drops, especially in the older age ranges, as Beth so astutely pointed out, and the people 80 to 89, likely due to COVID safety measures, we don't see a lot of changes in that trend data other than wiggles. But I think adding the N, which is something we thought of a little late as we were looking at the data earlier today, would be helpful. We could bring this back to steering or to the full council in January or February to get a little bit more feedback, if you think that's helpful, to see what folks think. And to share this more broadly, we're happy to do that. But I think it would be difficult to have this presented as part of the service summary sheet presentation just because of the amount of time both of those take for John to pull together and kind of the timing at the very end of the, by adding the general fund invoice data in. You know, we had to estimate a lot of those. We got a few of the large general fund invoices in like on that day and later that day of the week, like a month after the due date. So it's a lot of that is just not available till the very last minute, unfortunately. But we could definitely bring it after or bring it earlier. But right at that time, it would have to be older data, really.
Yeah, I mean, and this, again, this strikes me as sort of like what Ken's concern is. It really, you know, shakes out to be a concern with the data systems themselves and not being able to access the thing and to be able to get the information that he's requesting or seeing the gap that he has identified is a lot of man hours for what turns out to be potentially a dubious utility. As far as I can tell, I mean, we've just heard sort of the tip of that iceberg and we're at a loss as to what even to do with that information. And sometimes that's what sort of data is, you know, you think you're going to get, it's going to point you in a direction that is useful or illuminates trends, behaviors, and points you towards sort of an unmet need or something along those lines. And sometimes it just is, you know, oh, it's what we thought it was already. We're already, you know what I mean? Which isn't to say that we should abandon the idea of sort of examining these things because sometimes it surprises you, but I do wonder, I don't know, Dean, if you feel like if you feel like what we've heard today is useful to present at steering or full council, or you know, maybe this is just a thing that you know those concerned, such as Derek. I mean, and this is the cohort Derek works with, and it's also the cohort that Derek is within. Same thing with Ken, and so maybe this is. I mean, I hate to say this, but sometimes this is an exercise in satisfying curiosity as much as it is anything else. And we have to be wary of how much time and money we spend on satisfying curiosity.
Well, I understand that. I think that's why last meeting we talked about, should we form a work group so that there's a core group of council members across committees that are interested in this topic that can steer the conversation. So then, you know, Dean and Beth, you don't have to like hop around committees giving this presentation. But, you know, I'm also reviewing the notes from last month, and it seems like Mark doesn't like the idea of a work group just because of past trends with work groups. So I understand that perspective too.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, we kind of took a consensus and it really didn't get anything like to form a work group. I care about all issues, but I think, I don't know if I can just speak my mind. I think we've taken this as far as it can go here. And thank you, Dean, Beth, and John and Asensio for the work that you did.
Thank you.
If that's consensus with the group.
I mean, do you, instead of a work group, do you want to hold a special meeting that we advertise to council members, like a special session of the Community Engagement Committee on HIV and aging? Like, is that a thing that's been done, David, in the past?
Not in that way specifically, but I mean, the thing is, we often do, what will happen is if we have a specific piece of or a specific conversation that's upcoming, we'll often sort of be proactive in doing outreach to specific council members who are not within a committee, and also asking additional sort of stakeholders and people with information around this to attend as well. That's definitely a thing that we've done in the past that's been effective. We've specifically done that around housing in the past, and other sort of more acute concern topics. So if that's what you guys want to do, we can definitely do that. Maybe, you know, think about doing that in January. Yeah, I mean, that's an option for sure.
I have one idea that just came to me, so it might not be very good, and it's less timely, actually. But it strikes me as this actually dovetails pretty closely with the Aries presentation, which also already includes a lot of those caveats of, you know, this is the data, what it represents. You know, it's not the whole, everybody in the city, it's the people who are in our system. So this is really just like the service category adjunct to the Aries who's in our population. So we could almost have John do a presentation after the Aries presentation. I think that happens around July. I don't remember when. It's not as timely, but it fits into the council's workflow there potentially.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Thank you.
I'm also nodding my head.
Yep, great idea.
Is that July? No. I don't remember.
I think it was July or August.
Yeah, it generally moves around a little bit, but it tends to be sort of late summer in preparation for the summit.
Yeah, I think that's where it'd be most useful too.
So that's satisfactory for everyone. We'll move in the direction that Beth mentioned to attach it to an Aries, a subtopic when that comes up. All right, settled. All right, is that cool? All
right. Yes.
Thank you, everyone. So if we want to talk, I think we were going to discuss if there's going to be a community engagement meeting in December. Was that the last thing on our agenda?
I believe so, yes.
I propose no meeting.
I second that.
I'll third that. Oh,
yeah, if only because we don't even have a full council meeting in December, correct? Yeah, no. So I mean, and we've been not struggling, but things are a little light in the community engagement meeting right now, except for everyone's efforts. And so I second a motion for no community engagement meeting in the month of December.
Agreed.
That firm, David?
Yeah, so it sounds like you have consensus. How this works is we will, because I'm not sure if the scheduling fits into one of those things that has to be like formally approved by steering if you don't have quorum. that is generally my how I approach it, because being cautious is better than not. So we can basically take this as a recommendation to steering. Richard, when you, or Derek, if it's Derek, when you do your committee update at steering, you can yeah. just sort of include this, and then they can quickly approve it, and then we can move on. But there's no reason why they wouldn't approve it. So I think right now you can just sort of assume that there's not going to be a meeting in December.
All right. I was feeling a little despotic. All right. I'll go with the... No, that sounds good. So I'll be giving this report at the steering committee meeting, and I'll run this up the flag there. Okay, everyone?
Excellent.
Well, everyone, if we don't see each other again, happy holidays, and thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye, everyone.